It's Gary Parrish. It's Sunday, February 19th. Welcome back to the Eye on College Basketball podcast. I got Matt Norlander here with me, and we got a lot to get to, including a preview of Monday's game between Miami and Virginia and Tuesday's game between South Carolina and Florida. But first, Norlander, I'm just going to open the floor to you. You tell me, North Carolina destroying Virginia and giving the Cavaliers their third straight loss, or Kansas basically securing a 13th straight Big 12 title, or Gonzaga moving to 28-0, or Kentucky barely getting past Georgia, even though Yante Maton was gone after 2 minutes, or Michigan State's Aaron Harris suffering a college career-ending injury, or Caleb Swanigan getting 24-15 against Michigan State for what was his 24th double-double, or something else. What was the biggest story from college basketball this weekend?
Biggest story to me is Kansas, because the way this dovetailed, GP, the Hall of Fame finalists are always announced every year at All-Star Weekend. This is the one thing where basketball comes together in terms of college and pro and the Hall of Fame, because every year, All-Star Weekend, you get the finalists, and at the Final Four, you actually find out who is going to make the Hall of Fame in a given year. So the fact that Bill Self is now on the finalist lists, you wrote a column about how, listen, there's zero reason for this guy to have to wait to get in. With what he's done to this point, he should be an automatic in. And then Kansas winning at Baylor. I think I had that one. I believe you had the Bears.
I did have the Bears.
Baylor played. That was a really good game. I think that was actually the best game of the weekend, start to finish, the most well-played, closest. A lot of punches and counterpunches there from both teams. And I thought that Baylor was in really good position to get that win. Some of that, like if you're a Baylor fan and you're watching that game, it's the 10th time in a row you've lost to Kansas. And so much of it's like, I can so understand if you're so frustrated, because Kansas just always wins those freaking games. Like you cannot defeat them in those kind of situations. And that's part of why they're Kansas, and Bill Self is such a great coach and they've got really good players. And it's a lot of what Kansas was able to do there is why I would still, if we started the tournament today, I have not wavered off of picking Kansas to be the national champion this year, because even when like Devontae Graham did not have a good game at all, it could have been arguably his worst game of the season, but mostly he just didn't have a good shooting performance. He was good in other areas, but despite that, they still get enough from everyone else. They turn Baylor over just enough. Kansas, to me, it's going to be so hard for the Jayhawks now not to get a one seed, because the Big 12 rates as the toughest conference. I actually think I fight Pomeroy's ratings on this, and I think that Sagarin might have the Big 12 number one overall as well. I don't have his stuff in front of me, GP. But I would say the ACC is the best league, in part because it's the deepest league. The Big 12 is also very deep. I mean, it's got eight teams in the mix to get into the tournament this year. But what I'm getting at here is Kansas sweeping Baylor, in effect locking up, you know, a 13 straight regular season title. And I think only two of those years, maybe one of them, they've even shared the title. But they finished atop the league 13 years in a row with one more win that's officially in the books.
Yeah, one more win or one more Baylor loss. And you're exactly – it's one more win, yeah, or one more Baylor loss. So, like, it's done, because, like, two of the final four games are at – first off, Baylor ain't going to close with a 4-0. So that's that. And Kansas isn't going to go on a four-game losing streak. Like, I don't think they've ever done that under Bill Self. So, yeah, it's done. It's done. And they're going to be a one seed. You're exactly right. Like, you know, the committee starts – you know, the committee is – they care about the resumes, and regardless of what you think of Kansas or Bill Self's track record in NCAA tournaments, they're going to be a number one seed again. It's basically unavoidable at this point.
Unavoidable, yeah. They're not going to take on enough losses that are going to validate that. It would be not that it can't happen, but with how they've done, and what are they, 5-0 or 4-0 against top five teams in the polls this season. And Bill Self now has the best record, credit to ESPN for this stat, because I saw it on late Saturday night, with a minimum of five games against top five opponents. Bill Self has now won more games percentage-wise against top five teams than any coach in college basketball history. Even more reason why he should get into the Hall of Fame this year. I'll be interested to see if he does. Real quick, if you haven't seen it, he's a finalist, Rebecca Lobo, who was on the first UConn national championship winning team. That team went undefeated in 95. Kim Mulkey, longtime coach at Baylor. Chris Weber, who is kind of half known for Michigan, to be honest, and half for his pro career. I mean, he was a really, really good pro, but it's interesting how he is still connected to Michigan, even though there's so much, you know, the the Final Fours have been vacated, whatever. He was on the list. Bo Ryan's on the list again. Raleigh Massimino's a first-time honoree. And so I'll be interested to see. And then there's a few other folks as well. But I'll be interested to see, most interestingly, Self. And then Raleigh has gotten a lot of people kind of pushing for him. And I basically am of the belief that if Villanova doesn't win the national title last year, Raleigh's not on this list. I think part of Nova winning the way it did, Jay Wright being a huge proponent of him and a lot of coaches fighting for him, has gotten him onto the list. And, either way, Self is the person that I think is most deserving, even though he only has, quote unquote, one national title. I think it's an inevitability for him to get at least two. And so the biggest stuff from the weekend, I think, is related to Kansas sweeping Baylor. Yep. And establishing itself as legitimate a national title contender as we have in hoops.
All right, so let's talk about the Hall of Fame thing, right? Because that was sort of the point of my column. Like, this should be game, set, match. Like, the idea that this guy, that you could have a Hall of Fame ballot in front of you and not vote for Bill Self is just asinine. To your point, he does only have one national championship. So is John Calipari, and he got in.
Yeah.
You know, so like
Boeheim won.
Yeah, Boeheim won. He's in. So like, you can't use that against him. You know, you can't say he's only got one national championship because we just named two other active coaches.
Tarkanian got in with one.
Yeah, right.
I mean, this is that's definitely not a disqualifying note. No way.
So and then you start looking at the 13 straight Big 12 titles. By the way, assuming they're going to win this one outright, and I assume that they're going to win it outright, it would take something really weird for them not to. That'll be 13 Big 12 titles, nine of which will have been won outright. They've tied for four, in four of them.
More than I thought. Okay.
Yeah, four of them have been shared titles, but nine after this year will have been outright titles. No other school has ever won more than 13 league titles in a row. UCLA also won 13 in a row once upon a time, but those weren't all belonging to John Wooden. John Wooden won nine of them, but the 13 that UCLA won were actually shared between three different coaches. So no school's ever won more, though UCLA has won as many, which means heading into next season, Kansas will have an opportunity to win a 14th straight Big 12 title, which would be more than any school in the history of college basketball. But even if you're just focusing on coaches, nobody's done what Bill Self has done. Like, again, Wooden won nine. I think Mark Few's won a whole bunch in a row. I know Gonzaga as a school's won 11 in a row once upon a time, West Coast Conference titles. I don't know how many of them belong to Mark off the top of my head, but obviously some of them. Mike Krzyzewski, you like just run through the active Hall of Famers. Mike Krzyzewski, the most he's ever won in a row, five. John Calipari, five. Tom Izzo, four. Roy Williams, four. And Izzo, by the way, another active Hall of Famer who only has one national championship. Jim Boeheim, two, and Rick Pitino, two. So, like, from my perspective, like, what are we even talking about? Like, the guy's done something that literally no men's basketball coach has ever done, plus won a national title. That's good enough for the Hall of Fame. To the extent that people, and I want to ask you two different questions, because when I write this column, a lot of people go, oh, wow, that's amazing. I don't want to pretend that the commentary is all the same. Some people appreciate it, I think, properly. But then there's other people who say two things. One is, yeah, but it's in the Big 12. Big deal. It's not he's not doing this in the ACC. He's not doing this in the Big 10. He couldn't possibly do it in one of those leagues. As we pointed out, the Big 12 is like not only the toughest league in America, according to KenPom, it's been that way four straight years. It's ranked as the number one conference in America four straight years by KenPom. And in this 13-year stretch in which Kansas has won 13 straight Big 12 titles, it's been KenPom's top-rated league five different times. It's been a top-two league eight different times and a top-three league 10 different times. So the idea that they A, couldn't do this in another league, which may or may not be true. I don't know. I find it hard to believe that they'd be able to do this in the ACC, win 13 straight times. I'll concede that point. But the idea that they're doing it in a weak league, or that somehow the accomplishment should be discounted, like, runs counter to common sense from my perspective. Can you understand why people think that, or are they just like pissing on it to piss on it? Why do you think people suggest that it's not that crazy because it's just the Big 12?
Because Kansas has been so dominant throughout its history, and it's, you know, a top three, top four all time program. People will inherently dismiss it because the league, not only has Kansas been historically so much better and outpaced the rest of the league on a year-by-year basis, it's also because when you look at who else is in the league, who's the second best program in Big 12 history in that league. There's not a clear, and you know, West Virginia's new to it, but Iowa State maybe doesn't have a national title. You know, Oklahoma State has fallen off from what it once was. Oklahoma and Texas are both really good programs and both have had solid, you know, solid runs over the years in kind of spots. But there's no program within the league. Like in the Pac-12, you can stack up Arizona against UCLA if you want. In the ACC, there are so many. Even in the Big East, which Villanova is just lording over, from a historical standpoint, you could still even put schools. Marquette has a national championship. Georgetown has a national championship. There's enough there where you've got something. So the Big 12 is similar to the SEC, which has had Florida be good as of late, but it's not a historically all-time program. I think that's part of it. GP, I also wanted to include this, though. Like this idea that's – if there is an – I don't know if this pervades too much, but – I did want to include this since we're talking on Self real quick. The thought that this might be just, you know, Self's a good coach, but maybe he's not an all-time great coach because anyone could do this at Kansas. Here's the deal, though. He will be averaging north of 30 wins per year at Kansas by the time this season is done. That's remarkable. No coach is ever guaranteed that number. That's an insane number to average 30 when you play at maximum 40, but really it's closer to anywhere between 34 and 37, given the nature of the NCAA tournament. He's never won fewer than 23 games in a season. He has more league titles and home losses. This is the crazy part, though. So he began at Oral Roberts. He was also at Tulsa in Illinois. When he began at Oral Roberts, GP, the team was not in a conference. But when he was at Tulsa, they were in the WAC. Okay, so he has coached now, including this season, 19 seasons in a conference. He has never finished worse than runner-up in a conference. So not only is he almost always winning at Kansas, he's never finished a regular season slate where his team was worse than number two in the standings. That's just stupid. It's like, stupid. That like, should never happen.
And like, okay, two Final Fours, one national championship, three Elite Eights at three different schools.
And yes, and there's only six coaches who've ever done that.
No, I'm sorry, more than three Elite Eights. I forget how many Elite Eights it is, but it's Elite.
But he's taken three.
He's taken three different schools to the Elite Eight. And by the way, the Illinois team that went to the Final Four, played for a national championship, that's his team. You know, that it's a little bit like Bruce Weber went to a national championship game mostly with Bill Self's team, not unlike Tubby Smith won a national championship mostly with Rick Pitino's players, you know? And like
I still give Tubby and Bruce a fair amount of credit, but without a doubt, those were the guys that Bill brought in. I actually find that some people randomly think Self was coaching Illinois that year. They forget that he was gone by that point. Right. That was Bruce Weber on the sideline. Self had moved on to Kansas, and Roy had gone from Kansas to Carolina.
So the other the idea that anybody could be dismissive of the accomplishment of 13 straight league titles is just bananas to me. But whatever. The other thing that I heard besides that, people sort of just poo pooing on the idea that this is really unbelievable, is that, oh yeah, he's a great regular season coach. Watch him; they'll lose in the round of six. They'll lose in the Sweet 16 again. Is that a fair criticism of Bill Self that he has 13 Big 12 titles, but only one national championship? 13 Big 12 titles after this year, but what is it? Two Final Fours? Whatever it is. Like, does his postseason resume, is it a disappointment relative to his regular season awesomeness?
Well, I put it this way. If you put out every single coach in college basketball, all 351 of them, right? And you could, you know, in a hypothetical world, just blank slate, how many coaches would get picked before Self? It's extremely low. I mean, you got to pick it's almost like a coaching draft.
That's actually interesting. Okay, you were starting a
pick a coach and you got to have him for 10 years. So that, like, to me, that probably puts Krzyzewski way down the list because he's not going to coach in 10 years. Right. Roy won't, Boeheim won't, Pitino won't. So when you're looking at, you know, you'd start with Hall of Famers. I just don't think you'd get two or three guys down before you went to Self.
Who would you pick ahead of him? Who could you reasonably pick ahead of him? Calipari?
Izzo, maybe, if you wanted. Izzo is possible. Calipari. Sean Miller, maybe. Also has not made a Final Four. Coach that you'd have to stick with for 10 years. That might be it. You could argue for Tony Bennett if you wanted. Hasn't made a Final Four. I would take Self before Tony personally. Who else? I don't know.
You get them.
I don't know if there's anyone else. I would take Calipari before Self. I would take Sean Miller before Self. I don't think I would take Izzo before Self. So Self would probably be my third choice in the candidate pool. What about you?
It would be Calipari or Self. I mean, I just think that like it's foolproof. Like they've never not been awesome wherever they've been. And like Sean's never not been awesome either. Like Sean Miller's terrific, but
Sean Miller's going through what Self's going through on what Self once went through. He had not made a Final Four until he actually did it,
right?
And then won a title, you know?
Right.
It just seems like an inevitability with Sean.
Right. I agree completely. Like I would bet like my entire 401k that Sean Miller will make a Final Four at some point and probably win a national championship at some point. Like when you continue to, assemble, top shelf teams, like eventually it breaks for you. Like when I was talking to Hugs in advance of his, 800th win, cause he does not have a national championship. And that's primarily, at least in my opinion, and definitely in his opinion, cause he said this, because Kenny Martin broke his leg, in the 2000 Great Midwest tournament. If that doesn't happen, Bob Huggins probably has a national championship, and by extension, Tom Izzo probably doesn't. And so Hugs said he was on, and I might have told this story before. If so, I apologize. But Hugs said he was on some coaching panel, like a discussion, like coaching clinic thing with Denny Crum. And somebody asked Denny Crum, what does it take to win a national championship? And I think you could apply this exact same answer to what does it take to make a Final Four. He said Denny Crum's answer was, you have to be lucky, and you can't be unlucky. Like you can't have anything go against you that could possibly go against you, and you got to catch a break somewhere along the line. And it is really true. If you look at every national champion, outside of very few, there's a game or a moment where like it could have gone the other way, but it didn't. Like the big shot went in, the turnover happened, whatever, and. Eventually, like if you keep putting good teams on the floor, like eventually the ball just bounces your way. You get in and you break through and it'll happen for Sean. But that's it. That's an interesting conversation. If you could hire one coach to start your program in 2017, 18, you got to keep him for 10 years. Who would it be? I think Self and Calipari would go 1-2 in some order. Let me tell you about SeatGeek real quick. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long, long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or for that concert or for that show that you want to attend. And none of the older ticket sites, they wanted to change that. But SeatGeek came along and now they've changed that because they're going to take a lot of the headache out of the process. Before, you never know if you're getting the best deal. You never know what site to be on. But here's what SeatGeek does. It handles price comparison for you. It searches multiple ticket sites to ensure you get the best possible deal. So you never have to worry about if you're getting ripped off. Not going to get ripped off at SeatGeek. So do me a favor, if you haven't done it already, download the app. That's the SeatGeek app. You can find it in the App Store. Purchase your tickets to whatever, NBA game, college basketball game, doesn't matter. Then use the promo code COLLEGEBB. That's COLLEGEBB. And SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Again, the promo code is COLLEGEBB. That's COLLEGEBB. That's SeatGeek. Millions of tickets in one place. What else from the weekend stood out?
To me, it was actually Cal's press conference. Kentucky got a close shave win over Georgia. De'Aaron Fox kind of saved the day near the end there. And I wrote about how Kentucky unconventionally won because of foul shots. Kentucky's not a great free throw shooting team, but it was pretty reliable. And actually it was at about 80%. Bam, and I think went 1-for-2 in the end, and that dipped him down. But they had made the shots they needed to make when the game was close in the final 3 minutes. So good for Kentucky to get a road win, set them up well. They still have a chance to 2-seed all that. But then after the game, Parrish, I did not see the question because Kyle Tucker with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and SEC Country uploaded the video, and the video just kind of starts Calipari as he's getting into a little bit of a rant. And if you have not seen it, I do recommend it because I think it is Cal sort of at his best, because he starts to defend Mark Fox. I will say this for Calipari, publicly, without a doubt, this guy will on occasion stand up for his colleagues that are lesser known, often embattled, And to a certain extent, I think that very much comes from the fact that he flamed out in the pros. I think that still bothers him. He was sort of seen as not necessarily an outcast, but he never was able to really click with the Nets. And he obviously had some doubters when he came back to Memphis. So I always think that there's this part of Kyle that really wants to give back to the coaching community in this regard. And whether he senses that Georgia fans think that Mark Fox should be fired, I, by the way, don't think that, and I don't think that will happen. Nevertheless, he starts to defend Mark Fox and lays out what the team has gone through. They didn't have Yonte Mayton for 38 minutes of the game. I actually think if Mayton plays, Kentucky probably loses to Georgia on Saturday. Mayton's a really good player. He's probably been a top 30 player of value this season. And then GP, he just pivots into, I'm gonna drop the S bomb here. I think it's okay, but he just goes, "We're firing coaches midseason. Are you shitting me?" And as a coach, I get that. The one thing that I did find interesting was Cal was like, "Hey, coaches, I want you to put this in your contract. If you fire me midseason, you have to pay me." Well, most coaching contracts are they're built into these protections. They're called buyouts. They're there, and Gottfried's getting a sizable amount on his. But that was just something that I saw and I was like, oh, yeah, this is definitely something. There's no doubt about it. To see Cal say what he said and do what he did, I thought was a pretty cool thing to stand up for Gottfried and to stand up for Fox in that moment, because he wasn't asked to. He didn't necessarily have to. But I guarantee you both those guys got a hold of Calipari in the 24 hours after to send along their thanks, because it's easy to write columns, do podcasts, be a fan, you know, boo these guys. But at the same time, there is another side to it. And there was a lot of, you know, logical stuff that Cal ranted about over the course of 2 minutes.
Well, because I was his beat writer I was on the road with him every game for 4 straight years. And I saw him do that for other guys regularly. He is very aware that everything he says can create a headline. And he's very good about when he's in, when he's on the road. Like, I don't think he would have done that at Kentucky if that game would have been played inside Rupp. Like, I doubt he did that inside Rupp.
Good point.
Yeah, but when he knows that every local television station in Georgia is there, because that's really his audience, that's what he's aiming for, the local people. Like, you guys don't understand how good this guy is. I'm telling you, he should have beat us up there. He should have beat us today. He's got injuries. He's been unlucky, but he's good. You've got a good basketball coach. Appreciate him. I've seen him do that for other guys. And if you're Mark Fox, like, absolutely. You at the very least, send him a text last night or today and say thank you. Because I don't know that it'll change every Georgia fan's mind. I know it won't. But it might make an administration hesitate a little bit, if they're even leaning that direction at all. Just, hold up. Now, John Calipari thinks is he right or is he wrong? And I will say this, and please, you correct me if it's not true. People mostly think Mark Fox has done a good job at Georgia. You know, I know that the NCAA tournament appearances haven't come as regularly as you'd like, and he's not out signing top 10 recruiting classes. Like, I got all that. But Mark is respected in the industry. Like, people think he's a good basketball coach. And I'm not going to pretend that if Georgia wanted to make a change this year, next year, whenever, that there's no scenario under which they would be better for it. You never know when you're going to hire the next hot shot, up and coming, just blow it out of the water guy. You can screw it up too. Everybody thinks when they fire a coach and hire a new one that it's going to get better. And sometimes it gets worse. I despite what happened yesterday at Pitt with that win over Florida State, like you think Pitt fans maybe could appreciate Jamie Dixon a little more today than they could say a year ago. Sometimes fan bases get to a point where, what's happening right now isn't good enough anymore, and we want something different. And that's fine. And if the administration's on board, you'll get it. But it doesn't always get better. That's the thing sometimes people forget. Like, there is no guarantee that Mark Fox's replacement, if there happens to be one someday, is going to be as good as Mark Fox. If nothing else, right now, Georgia's got a good basketball coach who's respected in the industry. And I think that's the main message Cal was trying to deliver last night. It did make for a good video. Like, I watched it last night and retweeted it because he seemed passionate about what he was doing, and he understood that his words might matter. And if I were Mark Gottfried or Mark Fox, I would have sent him a text today saying thank you.
And listen, we're going to talk this happens every year to the listeners who are dialed into the podcast. Thanks for listening. The next 5 weeks are going to be a mix of let's talk about the bracket and the tournaments and the end of the season and bubble teams. And then it's going to eventually be coaching rumors, mill, who's hired, who's fired. So we're going to try our best not to, to, you know, hit on topics the same time over and over. But here's the fact of the matter is that 90% of guys are hired only to be fired. It's just the nature of the business. That's what the money's for. They make a lot of money. 90% of these dudes that will get hired are either fired or they'll move on. The other 10% either become legends at the place that they're at, or they get to retire on their own terms. And maybe even a few times they don't even get to retire on their own terms. So it's all a matter of a cycle. It's a matter of time, place, luck. It could be 3 years. It could be 5 years. It could be 8 years. It's just part of the deal. Fox has been with Georgia for 8 years. I definitely think that he is the kind of guy that you want to – I would not be eager to get him out. He has had relatively good success here. I think maybe the issue with some Georgia fans going forward is that, you know, Maton and Frazier being such big factors on the team this year, what will the team be next season if Maton decides to turn pro, which wouldn't stun me because he's a good player. Maybe he comes back. I don't know. I don't know what to expect. And in fact, I don't know how serious his knee injury was. Maybe he'll be able to play again this season. I didn't get the impression that it was season ending. So that's where we are with that. I don't know. We'll see. Anything else to you, GP?
Hold up. You cannot miss this opportunity. J.J. Frazier.
Frazier. Did you see my piece? I dropped the reference in there.
He got 36 points. How many people were tweeting you about Devin Downey?
Only a couple, but I admit I had Twitter closed before I finished it. And I straight up, I think I closed it out with a straight up. It was the best performance against Kentucky by a diminutive guard, someone under six feet since Devin Downey. Of course, there's no doubt about it. Shout out to Devin Downey.
Shout out to Devin Downey. He looked like Devin Downey. Like I was sitting there and I had to look around my room. I was like, is this 2010 all over again? It feels like 2010 all over again. He looked like Devin Downey. Shouts to Devin Downey.
Without a doubt. No, that's a good call before we move on. Frazier was a stud, without a doubt. This is not even being said for effect. That was a Devin Downey-esque performance through and through.
He was awesome. You concerned about Virginia at all?
Well, here's the weird thing. Again, like, what I can't decide with Virginia, GP, is this just going to be – every year we get, you know, a handful of teams that are 4, 5, 6 seeds. They randomly just kind of lose the first game or second game of the tournament while some other stuff's going on. It's like, oh yeah, by the way, oh yeah, their season ended. If you didn't notice, they lost by 6 points in the 4 o'clock window of the tournament. Virginia is still, they're number 8 in KenPom as we record this. Kansas is 9. Okay, how about UCLA is 18. Arizona is 21st at 25-3. This is why I use KenPom as a compass, but I don't rely on it entirely because I like to cross-reference with KPI and LRMC and Sagar and all that stuff. For Virginia still to be 8 in predictive measurements is interesting to me because that suggests specifically with Arizona that if Virginia and Arizona met on a neutral floor tomorrow, Vegas lines would have Virginia as a favorite. I cannot buy that at this point. I don't even remotely buy it. Now, Virginia has played a brutal schedule. There's no doubt about it. And a lot of their losses have come on the road. But they've lost 3 in a row, GP. They've lost, I think, 4 of their past 5. I know they beat Louisville recently. But concern? Yeah. And by the way, it's still okay, but if Virginia merely winds up with a 4 seed or a 5 seed, doesn't make a Sweet 16, it doesn't mean that, you know, we've talked actually a lot. It's not been an intentional pattern, but we've talked about stereotypes with teams and coaches. It doesn't mean that Bennett's not a good coach in March or whatever. Let's recall that this team does not have the player that was supposed to be its best player, and London's a good guy, don't get me wrong, but Austin Nichols, I still maintain, if he had not been a screw-up, would have been the most important player to this team and really would change the dynamic of the offense. So they don't get the win against Carolina. It's not even remotely close. They only managed 41 points. In fact, GP, I checked out of that game with about 15 minutes to go in the second half, mostly just watched an underwhelming dunk contest. It was actually kind of a crappy Saturday night in basketball all around because there wasn't really much going on. So okay to have concern, but at the same time, let's just keep the expectations tempered. I did actually think that Virginia with Nichols wouldn't even be a top 3 team in the ACC this season. That's certainly a guarantee now because out of nowhere, they go from, what, 7-2 in the league? Now they're 8-6.
So yeah, they were 7-2 in the league. Now they're 8-6. They were at one point 16-3 on this season. Now they're 18-8. They've lost three in a row. They've lost five of their last seven. And like, if you're looking for an issue, this is one of them. They're still terrific defensively. Top-rated defense in America, according to KenPom. They're 33rd in offensive efficiency. That's not terrible, but it's worse than they've usually been. I think they've been better than that each of the past four seasons offensively. So they never score a lot of points because they play at such a slow tempo, but they have been more efficient on the offensive end in the past 4 years than they have in this particular season. I do think this. The ACC is going to deliver losing streaks to basically everybody. And this might be a good point to make when you were trying to argue earlier that you still believe, despite what KenPom suggests, that the ACC, not the Big 12, is the best league in America. Like, Notre Dame went through that stretch a few weeks ago where they lost four in a row. And it was like, ooh, what's wrong with Notre Dame? Nothing. They're playing in the ACC. That's what's wrong. They're in the wrong league. And I tend to think that's mostly the issue here with Virginia because if you look at the losses, one of them is a double OT loss on the road at Virginia Tech. By definition, if you play a two OT game, it could have gone either way. So that's a loss that could have reasonably, easily been a win. And then you lose at home to Duke, and that's not good because it was a double-digit loss, 65-55. But it's still Duke, preseason number one with nine McDonald's All-Americans. And then you go to Carolina. You don't want to get your brains beat in, and they got their brains beat in. But it's still just a loss at North Carolina. My guess is they'll close the season probably with four straight wins, and then they'll be 12-6 in the ACC, projected as a top, three or four seed, and then we'll see if Tony can get to his first Final Four. But I'm not going to freak out about them. I do think that the talent discrepancy relative to some of the other really good teams in America, like he can, as great as Tony is, it can start to catch up with you at some point. And missing Austin Nichols is like, yeah, he was supposed to be their best player. He's not there. They were okay most of this season without him. But they're missing a former, four or five star recruit. They're missing a guy who was a, American Athletic Conference, all conference player. He was all the preseason stuff supposed to be their best player. Take the preseason best player off of other teams and see how they would be holding up. So you never want to lose three in a row, but I'm not that freaked out about Virginia. They do play again Monday night, so let's start there. Miami and Virginia. It is at Virginia. I believe the point spread according to KenPom would be Virginia minus 10. You think they handle that okay?
Yeah, I do think they're going to bounce back. Now, if they lose, and that's not expected at all, but if Virginia does not pull this out, or if it looks really sluggish, maybe barely wins, if the offense is brutal again, then we can have a serious conversation. I do think that Virginia will win. Miami's a team that I don't have a great grasp on because they have not defeated most of the really good competition that they played, but they did beat a Clemson team that just can't win any close games and can't beat anybody. So again, I'm not entirely sure. I think Virginia will win relatively closely. And then before we pick the next game here, GP, I would love to see Virginia play UCLA in the tournament. And if that could happen in the second round of Sweet 16, and that's the number one offense, number one defense, right now, with the way that both teams are built, I just don't see how UCLA doesn't win that game with some flair and maybe a little ease. Like, never underestimate the Virginia D. I get that. But that would be an amazing thing. If they could somehow wind up in the same quadrant and then meet in the second round or Sweet 16, I just would get as much watched to me as it could possibly be, because their styles are just polar opposites.
Now, you got one team that's the best offensive team in America, then the best defensive team in America, one team that wants to get up and down, the other team that wants to do the opposite of that. It would be a fascinating matchup. And to a point you've made previously, college basketball will never be able to match the NBA from a skill set perspective, shot making perspective, any of that stuff. But we do get drastic matchups that, were different styles and that can be fascinating. And Virginia UCLA would be like an all timer, I think. Really fun. I think Virginia snaps this three-game losing streak. I think they handle Miami in Charlottesville. I'd probably take 10 points because you get a Miami team that's, probably a top 35 team in America. And, with such a slow tempo, like 10 points is a lot of points. So I'd probably take the points. But keep in mind, I'm a terrible gambler, so do what you do.
And Miami's missing Jaquan Newton, I think, which is his third game of his suspension
yeah.
as well.
Yeah, he gets suspended around this time of the year every year. It's ridiculous. It's like, oh, yes. It's Valentine's Day. Jaquan Newton's probably about to get suspended. Like, it happens. It doesn't happen every year, but it did happen last year. Like, same type of thing. Then Tuesday night, there's an SEC game between South Carolina and Florida going to be played at Florida. Speaking of three-game losing streaks, it looked like South Carolina is on the verge of getting to one because they lost at home to Arkansas last Wednesday night, then lost at Vanderbilt this weekend. And now they got to go to Florida. KenPom's got the spread at Florida minus 11. Would you lay the points? We both think Florida wins the game, right?
Yeah, I would pick South Carolina to cover in that instance. This is a big one for their seeding. It's the second biggest SEC game left of the season, with Florida playing at Kentucky on Saturday, I believe. That is a CBS game. Yeah, that's a 7 o'clock tip on Tuesday night, South Carolina at Florida. Florida is now down a big man. Igbunu is out for the rest of the season. They look like it didn't matter at Mississippi State. It was close, but UF getting that kind of win was huge. Florida will ultimately go as far as their guards carry them if they can still play competently. I know Gator fans are thrilled to see that they've got just at least some consistency there. I do like the Gators. Before you pick that game, GP, I'll also include that Tuesday night. We could be talking about Crean on Wednesday. I mean, Indiana's got a road game against Iowa. Losing that, if they lose it and it goes bad, the fan base is really going to be on highest of high alerts here, because it's going to be five straight losses, and the NIT basically will be off the table at that point. So just, if you're interested in car wrecks, that might be something worth turning into. And then Northwestern will effectively lock up a bid if it wins at Illinois. I said all along they're getting to the tournament, yes. But it's just a matter of getting enough wins. They beat Illinois on the road on Tuesday night. I would venture to say that Northwestern could basically afford to lose out and still get in, because that would be four straight losses. I still think they'd get in with that. So that's also what's happening Tuesday. Fire away.
I think I take South Carolina plus the points, but I do think Florida wins the game. And then we got a massive game, like you said, on Saturday, Florida-Kentucky. That could end up being the game that decides the SEC regular season title. I'm with you on Northwestern. Like, when I sat down on Sunday morning to do the top 25 and one, I was picking between a handful of teams to put in that 26 spot. It was Wichita State, Northwestern, Minnesota, Iowa State, and Oklahoma State. I went with Iowa State, but the idea that I'm on February 19th, considering putting Northwestern in my top 25 and one rankings, just underlines how wonderful a job Chris Collins has done there. In theory, you can have success basically anywhere in college basketball, but Northwestern is a place where they've never made the NCAA tournament, famously, and he looks like he's less than a month away from snapping that streak. It's going to be one of the big stories on Selection Sunday, that this school that's never done it before is, at this point, like you said, almost certainly going to do it. Before we get out of here, thoughts to Michigan State's Aaron Harris. What a terrible thing to see.
Oh, yeah.
On Saturday. It looked bad when it happened. His teammates were in tears. That's never a good sign. And the confirmation came on Sunday as a season-ending knee injury. He will have to have surgery. And it's not only season-ending, because he's a senior. It is a college career ending injury, and just you never get that back. I mean, we've talked about this before, whether it was with Maurice Watson or somebody else. These types of injuries are terrible no matter who they happen to. When they happen to seniors in their senior years, it's just especially bad. And so just awful, awful story for Michigan State in general, but specifically for that young man.
Yeah, real quick. One, Izzo specifically early on in the season called Harris out for lack of attentiveness and not doing as much as he was expecting him to do. Really get the impression over the past month and a half that Harris had fully, both committed himself, but also had become the kind of senior guy that Izzo just cherishes like gold. And so for him to make that final turn of the corner and then to lose the rest of his college career to an injury like this, I mean, he bumps up against Isaac Haas, who is a freaking mountain, and it's just an awkward bump, a bad fall. You can hear the screams. Bridges is in tears. It's rough for Michigan State. Hopefully, and it should be, you know, an injury that he can recover from. Aaron Harris has, I think, natural talent and ability to have a solid decade-long career playing overseas. For Michigan State, they're 16-11. Now, the committee will – this comes – it's interesting when these kind of injuries happen, because Harris is not an all-league player, but he is an important player to Michigan State, and now we have a very condensed sample size that the committee will evaluate the team on. And it won't discount what he did with them, but if Michigan State is really bad, I mean, it's got to beat Nebraska at home on Thursday. That's the next game. You lose that, and then if you lose to Wisconsin, then yes, they're going to be in serious trouble in terms of not getting to the tournament. Broadly speaking, they've got two home, two road games. Let's just say one minimal in the Big Ten tournament. That's five left. If Michigan State can win three of those five, I think they're a lock to get in. If they only win two of them, then it gets really interesting. But hopefully, you know, Harris can recover relatively quickly. And Michigan State, man, just has been, you know, a season beset by injuries. And we'll see what happens, what they do. I will say this as we close up. If they get into the tournament, and I do think that they will, it would be just the most Tom Izzo thing ever if they would just – if they make the Sweet 16 out of it, like, just watch that happen. Just insane. It should not happen. Zero business. Watch them get a 10, beat a 7, upset the 2, something stupid like that. It would just be the most Izzo thing to ever happen.
Before we clock out of here, let me remind you that you can get a free offer right now at harrys.com/collegebb. I'm sure you are, like me, tired of paying too much for a razor and a blade that's not that good anyway. You don't have to do that anymore. Go to harrys.com/collegebb. And they're going to give you their most popular trial set for free. Now, you're going to have to pay a small shipping fee, but that's it. You get everything else for free. A razor handle of your choice, plus a 5-blade cartridge and some shaving gel. All you got to do, harrys.com/collegebb. I've been using Harry's razors for a pretty good while now, and I can tell you it's a great shave. It's a good razor at an inferior price. And you don't have to go get them. You don't have to pop into your corner pharmacy ever again. They're going to deliver them right to your front door. So I'm saving you money. I'm saving you time. And all you got to do is go to harrys.com/collegebb. That's harrys.com/collegebb. And when you're done with the free trial set, you'll start getting blades just like I do, shipped directly to your door for a fraction of the price that the leading brand cost in your traditional corner store. So get started now. All you got to do is pay shipping. Go to harrys.com/collegebb. That's harrys.com/collegebb. And you'll get razors delivered straight to your door. Remember, we're going to be back on a Wednesday. We'll look back at some of the games on Monday night and Tuesday night. Start getting ready for the weekend. You can subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast on iTunes. That's the best way to get the latest episodes as quickly as possible. We always put them on the website as well, cbssports.com. But they're always, always, without exception, in iTunes first. So if you subscribe, you'll get them first. Thank you all for listening. We're going to talk to you again on Wednesday. Till then, take care.